Blog Talk Radio.
$400, it's not even $500 a week.
I'm wondering how much they want to pay them. $7.25 an hour?
Probably $7.25 an hour, $8, something like that. Whatever their minimum wage is. Excuse me. Whatever their minimum wage is in D.C.
Yeah, it's pretty expensive to live in D.C., I'll tell you. And the people that are probably applying for a job in Walmart probably don't even live in D.C. Or they live in Anacostia, which is the really poor section of D.C.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's the way it goes. But anyway, let's go on to more encouraging news.
I found that a bit encouraging. It is.
But here's very discouraging news. But it's nevertheless, it's in the blog. And, you know, it just this Senator Lindsey is probably one of the biggest a-holes I've ever heard of. And
let's go to the full article.
But it says, today's Republicans are even too extreme for Ronald Reagan, if you can believe that.
That's hard to believe, isn't it?
Well, yeah, you know, it is. But, while many of today's prominent Republican elected officials point to former President Ronald Reagan as their patron saint, they moved so far to the right that their positions are way out of line with what Reagan actually did as president. For instance, earlier this year, Senator Lindsey Graham said that the National Labor Relations Board was the most out-of-control agency in Washington because it made rulings that favored workers. Previously, he said, given its recent actions, the National Labor Review Board is inoperable, as inoperable could be considered progress. But in 1985, Reagan had a totally different take on the board that protects workers' rights. He said, a free labor movement is essential to the preservation and expansion of free enterprise. Since its passage in 1935, the National Labor Relations Act has been a bulwark of support for this vital American heritage. Yet, Reagan was the union killer. I don't know what the hell.
Yeah, he destroyed the lot of unions.
Yeah, a half century ago, this law established the right of workers to organize and bargain collectively, could they choose to do so. Our system of peaceful industrial relations and the labor war policy that has evolved from the Act rests on the principle of free choice. A National Labor Relations Board is to be commended for its fairness in enforcing the statute over the last 50 years. I had first-hand experience with the board running my tenure as president of the Screen Actors Guild many years ago, and I can attest to its outstanding record. In conducting union representation elections and processing unfair labor practice charges, the NLRB has helped build a peaceful industrial relations system that is a model for the free world. The process of the board, as necessary today as they were 50 years ago, provides a forum and an orderly legal framework for resolving labor and management disputes. Truly, the National Labor Review Board has succeeded in fulfilling its mandate for Americans. And that was Ronald Reagan. He says if Reagan were around today, Republicans like Graham would likely reject him as too moderate, all because he believes people need and deserve basic work rights. So,
and a living wage.
And a living wage. You know.
Geez, not too much to ask.
But, you know, Reagan was questionable, too, believe me.
But in today's world, it seems like it is too much to ask for a living wage.
Yeah. But, Tribune announces spinoff of newspaper business. No immediate sale to the Koch brothers.
Tribune Company has announced that it will split in two, separating its newspaper business from its broadcasting unit, as it focuses more on its television operations in an attempt to become more profitable. The announced spinoff is at least a temporary setback to Charles and David Koch, the conservative billionaire brothers who had expressed an interest in acquiring the newspapers. The Tribune Company owns the Los Angeles Times, the Chicago Tribune, Baltimore Sun, and several other leading newspapers around the country, including, I think, the Hartford Courant right here in Connecticut. A spinoff will allow the current owners of the Tribune, including pension funds invested through the Tribune's larger shareholder, Oaktree Capital, to participate in a hoped-for turnaround of the newspapers as new sources of revenue, such as digital subscriptions, grow. The spinoff is also a victory for journalistic integrity. Over the years, the Koch brothers have funded a variety of ultra-conservative organizations and causes. Many have feared that the Koch-owned newspapers would be transformed to promote their political views. Charles Koch dismissed such concerns, saying that the editorial pages of any purchased newspapers would be a marketplace of ideas. Yeah, right. Oh, what a liar.
Well, he's already taken over. You know, they're heavily funding
NPR.
PBS.
I didn't mean NPR. Well, maybe NPR, too.
Yeah, maybe, too.
The labor movement has also criticized any potential sale of the Tribune newspapers to the Koch brothers. The California Labor Federation issued a report the Koch brothers filed, and the Newspaper Guild CWA organized a panel of journalists at the National Press Club to discuss the dangers of such a sale. Although a spinoff would not prevent the Kochs from trying to purchase newspapers in the future, and an immediate sale of the Tribune newspapers is unlikely for the time being.
Well, that's got to know, just to hold those guys away from that.
Yeah.
And it just frightens you to know that the...
They have such tentacles.
Yeah, they do. And you know, right now, the media, the mainstream media, is only owned by about three or four major corporations. That's it.
Mm.
They own the papers. They own the networks.
Yeah.
You know, they own all of the politicians.
They dictate the news.
Yeah, and their news is dictated by Obama, basically, you know,
yeah.
And by the CIA and the FBI. That's all known. I mean, there's no free press there, unless it's a newspaper, and that's why Koch wants to buy it. So let's say
and Gap Bangladesh Safety Alliance, weak and worthless. Oh, I believe that.
Yeah.
Oh, play that little video.
I'll just explain it, though. It just says that labor and student activists protest outside the Bipartisan Policy Center in downtown Washington, D.C., highlight the hypocrisy of a corporate public relations spectacle led by the Gap and Walmart. The retail giants announced today yet another toothless voluntary private regulation scheme for the garment industry in Bangladesh. More than 1,800 workers have died in preventable factory fires and collapses since 2005. In response, workers and their allies recently negotiated an innovative, enforceable agreement to improve safety and rights of these workers. Since May 15th, 80 companies have signed the accord on fire and building safety in Bangladesh. But let's see what they're talking about here. Video.
Little audio piece here. Let's see if we can get it to come up. It's buffering. Buffer, buffer. Maybe not.
Yeah.
I
do. Must be made in Bangladesh or something. It's
made in Facebook land. Or YouTube land.
Plus YouTube.
There's been another horrific incident at a garment factory in Bangladesh. An 8-story building collapsed today, killing at least 145 people. This just months after a fire killed more than 100 people and put the unsafe working conditions at many factories in the global spotlight.
I mean, I previously didn't know that the Gap was not signing this contract, not involved in maintaining their labor safety.
This
was unknown to me. That even though it was a big New York Times article, it still didn't get as much attention as you think it would. Like, I don't really know many people in our generation who have come across.
It's more
like you said, having that moral conscience as you're buying something or pulling something off of a rack and having the person who made it in mind, I think is really powerful and can go a long way.
You have to have this new video game, have all the coolest toys. And so you have one message where if you're trying to teach a kid, yeah, this stuff is bad, the working conditions where they produce this stuff is horrible, they're not treating people correctly, and they really can't connect with that human suffering aspect of it. The counter message of this is the greatest thing ever, this is so cool, outweighs that. You can't see the pain.
They see what's going on, probably the best course of action would be for the customers to complain and let the companies know that they know what's going on and they want something to change.
Abercrombie and Fitch is such a wacko group now.
Benetton, that's a company that we know about.
Aldi Nord, I don't
know what that is. Aldi Nord, I don't know.
Aldi South, Aldi Nord, or something. And these
are Von Marx.
Fat Face, a zillion companies here, but there's 80 of them, none of which I know. So,
Target, Australia. Puma, you've heard of that brand.
Let's
see.
John Lewis. I don't know any of these. Any of these companies.
I don't know a lot of them either.
Not
some
major,
of them are international.
Let's say none of the major ones that we know.
But I guess Walmart and Gap, which are pretty big companies, didn't sign on to it.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't care whether the workers in Bangladesh have good working conditions.
They just die.
I mean, that's just cruel.
Don't you think so?
It's so callous and heartless.
It is. It's just
you know, I don't think they're asking for a lot, just to be able to get out the back door if the place has fallen down.
Yeah. Hey, good Lord. That's really sick. Let's see. I don't even want to give this guy any attention, but...
Who's that?
I don't know, maybe we should...
Contest backfires on Social Security privatizer.
Yeah, it appears that this idiot, I can't just call him an idiot, I can't imagine what a heartless SOB this guy must be, though.
Let's
okay,
read it.
Really.
His audio.
Yeah, well, hang on a second. And he's a billionaire.
Pete Peterson is a conservative billionaire who is a major financier in the effort to dismantle, cut, and privatize Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Recently, he and his foundation held a contest asking for folks to submit videos on why it is important to fix the national debt of which he and his foundation falsely claim Social Security is a major contributor.
Sometimes the best laid plans for a propaganda campaign can go awry. Winner of the $500 grand prize.
Oh, gee, big prize.
Yeah, determined by a popular vote on the website, came from the completely opposite side of Peterson's cut Social Security argument. It just scrapped the cap. Winning video features rapping seniors arriving their way to the conclusion that the way to shore up Social Security's long-term finances isn't through cuts or privatization, by scrapping the payroll tax cap on Social Security. That means billionaires like Peterson and rich CEOs would pay the same Social Security tax that low to upper middle income workers do. Currently, any income above the $113,700 cap is exempt from Social Security tax. Well, Peterson's check went to Robbie Stern of Social Security Works, the group that produced the video. Stern signed it over to Social Security Works and said, "We will use the $500 to finance our education efforts and our Scrap the Caps campaign. We want to save Social Security from Peterson and his band of wealthy supporters." Scrap the cap. If you could scrap the cap and make those guys...
Let's see. Maybe this is the video.
Yeah. If you could scrap the cap...
The real old school in the house.
Give it up for the geezers.
Had a golden year, all planned out. Small pension, golf cart, and a Florida house.
But Congress put a hit on Social Security, mugged us of our dignity despite our maturity.
Tax we paid, every check we earned. Time to collect, we the ones getting burned.
There's nothing we can do if we can't get paid, except eat cat food and drink Gatorade.
Listen up, cuz, while we drop some knowledge. We raise your little boy, put him through college.
Only safety net is our next of kin. Look out, son, cuz we're moving in.
We're moving in.
We're moving in.
Pull out the couch, cuz we're moving in. No arguing.
No arguing.
Pull out the couch, cuz we're moving in. Think spinal twist, check my orthopedic kicks, cause I stoop farther south than the Saint Lunatics. I'm still getting play, and it's all thanks to Pfizer, keeping me stiffer than... examine Yankees cap visor.
My station wagon windows are dark with tint. I subscribe to Vibe and I get the large print. They call me Martini, got substance abuse. I'm always playing gin and sipping on juice.
Our son wants to know if we can pay the rent. But without benefits, we ain't got 50 cents.
We don't pack a nine, we just strap for funds. But we're still game killers for our bachelor's son.
You're out of town.
That figure needs to be put in context in two ways, adjusted for inflation that would be $8,060 today compared with the current program's cap of $5,500 a year. But to put $1,000 in the context of college tuition, in 1958, tuition to the Ivy League University of Pennsylvania was $1,050 a year for undergraduates. The loans were backed by the U.S. Treasury, so the legislation fixed the payback at the cost of money to the U.S. government at 3%. To put that 3% in context, in 1958, the prime rate that lending banks charged in good corporate clients was 4%, and home mortgage interest rates were running close to 5%. This was built-in loan forgiveness. There was built-in loan forgiveness for students who entered the K-12 teaching corps. So to summarize, in less than 1 year, a Republican president and a Democratic Congress put in place a program to expand college opportunities so that an American child could borrow and pay for tuition to any college in the U.S., including the Ivy League, and borrow the money at a rate less than the prime rate for American corporations or home mortgages of the day. Now in 2013, the 21st century is here, and what policymakers understood in 1958 would happen is upon us. We live in a global economy where the success of a nation depends on the ability to train highly skilled workforce. And what is the reaction? Well, the Senate passed an immigration reform bill that will increase the flow of highly skilled workers into the U.S. by estimates of 40,000 a year. And Congress left town for district days to celebrate. Congress left the district to celebrate American independence, letting the interest rate on college student debt double to 6.8% at a time when the prime lending rate is 3.25% and mortgages are around 4.3%. On Tuesday, the president met with the Congressional-backed Black Caucus, which raised the regulatory changes the Department of Education made that resulted in denying college loan access to middle-income African-American families by arbitrarily changing the way their creditworthiness was determined. African-American families that had been receiving loans then were denied loans, throwing students out of school midway in their studies. More than 15,000 of these families had students in historically black colleges and universities. The schools that graduate almost 1 in 3 African-Americans earning baccalaureate in science, technology, engineering, or math, the very skills Americans lack. So does this mean the response from the President and the Congress is that facing a need to increase skilled workers, we will import them and save on having to do something to lift American children up? As a nation, we are facing the same crossroads faced in 1958. But what a difference 55 years makes in American policy. Rather than double down our investment on American children and give them every advantage to pull our nation forward to meet the challenges ahead, we would rather outsource the skill development and import the talent. On Friday, July 5th, right after Independence Day, the Labor Department reported that the unemployment rate for 18 and 19-year-olds, our current crop of high school graduates, was 22.6%. For those 20 to 24, including those who have currently finished college or community college, the unemployment rate was 13.5%. For 18 to 19-year-olds, that is an improvement over the record level of 24.3% they had in December of 2009. But it still is worse than any monthly unemployment rate in history before 2009, except for the 2 months in 1982 to 83 when there was a turndown when it peaked at 22.8%. These numbers are not acceptable. Four years into recovery, we cannot leave our young people with no jobs and turn our backs on them in helping to make their investment in education affordable. This is terrible. Young people are not fools. The government stepped in to bail out Wall Street when it collapsed on its own folly. The Federal Reserve stepped in to hand money at virtually zero interest rate to keep banks afloat. So clearly government is not the problem. If you are a group that can pay your way to the table, government is the answer. To economists, interest rates tell us the price of the future. It's called the discount rate, letting us know how much you would discount getting money in the future rather than today. When we set high interest rates on loans to students, we are saying that now is more important than their future. When we would rather give money to banks or corporations at a lower rate, we are betting more of our future on them than on our children. Worse, as Senator Elizabeth Warren, Democrat of Massachusetts, points out, by charging our children higher rates, the government nets $51 billion above its cost of obtaining funds. So when we are more concerned about keeping the tax rates low for corporations that keep their money offshore and hide behind foreign tax haven borders than in creating policies to hire our own children, it says even more. And when our response to skill shortages to import people rather than develop our children, we say even more. Two different times, two different policy reactions. Says a lot about us.
Sure
does. Says a lot about that Congress. And they had the nerve to leave town. The nerve! Should all be tarred and feathered.
Oh, yeah. These guys are bad. They're really bad.
Yeah, they really are.
So
why don't we choose a song while we go to our next segment in our show?
Okay.
We're going to play a little song and then we're going to bring up some other news.
Yeah, you just passed it. It's right there.
This is where you were.
Oh, yes. It's right here.
Trying to find the article that said that he's, that Snowden is definitely going to Venezuela.
Yeah.
And I'll play this a little bit here. It's BBC News. Bolivia has met with the ambassadors of France, Spain, Portugal, and Italy to hear their explanations as to why their nations blocked President Evo Morales' jet last week. He was returning home from Moscow when his plane was forced to reroute and land in Austria because there were rumors the American fugitive Edward Snowden was on board. The incident has sparked anger and protests in the country's capital, La Paz, as Katrina Moe reports.
They marched in their thousands, Bolivians angry at how their president has been treated. Making their way to the U.S. Embassy in the capital, La Paz, they demanded its closure. The protest comes after President Evo Morales' plane was forced to land in Austria last week. He's been on a visit to Moscow. The ambassadors of Spain, France, Italy, and Portugal have met with the Bolivian government after being summoned to explain why they closed their airspace. It's been indicated by some European officials that they were told the U.S. intelligence whistleblower Edward Snowden was on board the president's jet.
There was not at any time an inspection of the presidential plane in Austrian territory, nor in any other territory until its return to Bolivia. Another issue that we are investigating and that we want them to explain is why the United States had given the order, had pressured the countries to carry out this veto on false allegations, the false argument that this plane was carrying Mr. Snowden.
Relations with the United States and the European Union are now tenuous. Outside the embassy, they let off firecrackers and burnt flags belonging to the countries involved.
Companions, as union workers, we insist that the U.S. embassy be expelled. If they do not apologize to the Bolivian people and the government, we will seek an expulsion of their ambassadors.
The governments of Bolivia and Venezuela have confirmed they've now received official asylum requests from Edward Snowden. It comes days after both countries confirmed they would accept him.
He will need to decide when to fly here, if he definitely wants to fly here. The fact is that Latin America is humanitarian territory, and it's growing all the time.
The 30-year-old is believed to be in a Moscow airport transit area, wanted by the United States for espionage. Right now, though, this country wants answers, calling the episode an act of state terrorism, one intended to intimidate. Katerina Moe, BBC News.
No kidding.
Amazing, huh?
Yeah.
So, anyway, that's what's going on here. I'm going to tell you.
How's he going to get from Moscow, from that Moscow airport?
That's
going to
be a question. I don't know. They're going to be watching every move he makes, but God, I hope he... Well, I read something yesterday, and I was trying to find it again, but I read it, it might have been today, that he may wind up getting there by a U.N. passport. The U.N. may issue him a passport.
Oh. No, but what's going to prevent him from getting on a... Say he gets on a plane, and we just force it down.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, by rights, they can't do that.
Well, we just did.
Well, they did, but they didn't have the right to do it.
That didn't seem to matter.
It didn't seem to matter, yeah. Let me... here's something that's interesting.
Trust me, I know. Psychobabble.
Yeah, the new political wonder weapon, psychobabble. Let's see. It says, I saw two psychobabble things today, which in combination read my discernment, red flagged my discernment. I said, let me go to this. This was an interesting article.
Okay.
Beyondprophecy.blogspot.ca is the...
Offering buffering? Okay.
Conspiracy much
disagree with authority. You may find yourself tight. Fear not. Farmer has treatment. Gulag, anyone? It may be later than you think. Sometimes things catch the corner of my eye and inspire me to glance. Sometimes when I glance, I become riveted. Sometimes the object of notice is worthy of chronicle. I saw two psychobabble things today, which in combination red-flagged my discernment. The first, a mental illness article called Oppositional Defiance Disorder. Initially, this disorder was concocted to type children, particularly boys, with a condition label of rebelliousness against authority. ODD, or Oppositional Defiance Disorder, or social aggression, is defined as a pattern of disobedient, negativistic, and provocative opposition to authority figures. In the old days, I suspect, this natural phase of development was referred to as little hellion or brat.
As I remember the phrase, or the phase, passed with some encouragement to do so, and the afflicted matured and moved forward. Now the phase of behavior is called ODD, ostensibly so big pharma can't get a piece of the action.
So big pharma can get a piece of...
So big pharma can get a piece of the action. There are huge profits in doping down kids.
Yeah.
The disturbing thing is, certain adults who may have a penchant for challenging up against authority figures when warranted are now being looked at as similarly suffering from a mental disorder. In other words, disagreement with psychopathic leadership may earn the distinction of mental illness. And why anti-authoritarians are diagnosed as mentally ill. The second article is about why rational people buy into conspiracy theories. All right? A predictable little mainstream piece which notes in part, psychologists aren't sure whether powerlessness causes conspiracy theories or vice versa. Either way, the current scientific thinking suggests that these beliefs are nothing more than an extreme form of cynicism, a turning away from politics and a traditional media, and which only perpetrates the problem. God almighty. I think that causes conspiracy theories is the dull and monotonous daily stream of proven cases. It is understandable that when prevailing evidence routinely uncovers plots to conspire for personal gain, it is natural to expect more of the same, especially when these errant behaviors are left unchecked, unchallenged, and even condoned by, say, authority figures, who must not be challenged, apparently. And the author calls this perpetration of the problem. I call it a prudent exercise with given cause.
A reader responded to the article by saying, "Part of the conspiracy cohort is made up of those of us who grew up during Watergate, the lies told about the number of enemy deaths during the Vietnam War, the actions of major corporations in places like Chile in the 70s and 80s. Some of us stood in public spaces in the heart of our universities with the guns of National Guard trained on us. These were all factual happenings, many uncovered and reported on by this very paper. Our childhood was built upon the illusion that America was mostly just a large Mayberry. These revelations shook our basic beliefs right to the ground. It is hard to step back from that cliff once you've been pushed to the edge of it. To which I say, bravo. So there we have it. Unless you are completely docile, compliant, servile, complacent, and generally intellectually comatose, you are a candidate for state mental evaluation and rife for attitude reprogramming."
That's what they do in China.
Why does that? North Korea. Yeah, that's why Lieberman just left his visit to China.
And why does that prospect seem so familiar? It would not surprise me if an entirely new psychosis is coined in the near future, one that combines both suspicion of conspiracy and anti-authority traits. It will have some sort of fancy name, so it is eligible for treatments, no doubt.
How about IRA phobia?
IRS phobia.
IRS phobia. IRS phobia.
I suppose the qualifying observation should be, if elitist conspiracy would cease and leadership acted in a sane fashion, we would all be cured for free. Norm Chomsky talks about challenging authority. That might be interesting.
Yeah, let's see what he has to say.
In your essay, Language and Freedom, you write, "Social action must be animated by a vision of a future society." I was wondering what vision of a future society animates you.
Well, I have my own ideas as to what a future society should look like. I've written about them. I mean, I think that we should, at the most general level, we should be seeking out forms of authority and domination and challenging their legitimacy. Now, sometimes they are legitimate. That is, let's say, they're needed for survival. So, for example, I wouldn't suggest that during the Second World War, the forms of authority, we had a totalitarian society, basically, and I thought there was some justification for that under the wartime conditions. And there are other forms of relations between parents and children, for example, involve forms of coercion, which are sometimes justifiable. But any form of coercion and control requires justification, and most of them are completely unjustifiable. Now, at various stages of human civilization, it's been possible to challenge some of them, but not others. Others are too deep-seated, or you don't see them, or whatever. And so at any particular point, you try to detect those forms of authority and domination, which are subject to change, and which do not have any legitimacy, in fact, which often strike at fundamental human rights and your understanding of fundamental human nature and rights. Well, what are the major things, say, today? There are some that are being addressed in a way.
So, anyway, he's an okay guy, but a lot of his stuff is questionable. Chomsky,
I don't know how I feel about him.
I never felt comfortable with him. There's my thing again. Sorry, isn't it?
I think it comes up because...
Because of my, I think so too. But, I don't know. Anyway, let's see what else we can go here.
We just have a few more minutes. What did Malcolm X say?
Malcolm X said, did the Zionists have the legal or moral right to invade Arab Palestine, uproot its Arab citizens from their homes, and seize all Arab property for themselves just based on the religious claim that their forefathers lived there thousands of years ago? Only 1,000 years ago, the Muslims, the Moors lived in Spain. Would this give the Muslims of today the legal and moral right to invade the Iberian Peninsula, drive out the Spanish citizens, and then set up a new Moroccan nation where Spain used to be, as the European Zionists have done to the Arab brothers and sisters in Palestine? That was Malcolm X said that. And he's absolutely right.
He was a right man.
Zionism is so wrong. It's so, so unbelievably wrong.
He was a man way ahead of his time.
Yeah, and they shot him.
That's why.
Emergency broadcast can be hacked, U.S. researchers say.
That's what this is.
That's anonymous.
Anonymous, yeah.
And, I guess we only got a second.
Yeah, we're right to the end of the show.
If there's anything you can do.
Quickly. Yeah.
Well, let's remember Gaza. In the midst of Egypt's struggles, Gaza is again forgotten.
Yeah.
The events in Egypt led first to speculation that the Rafah crossing might be closed, which became a certainty today. And non-news reports that the border, the only crossing not directly controlled by the Zionists, indirectly, yes, was closed due to security unrest with the Sinai Peninsula. Press TV reports that some 800 Palestinians, Palestinian people, normally leave for Egypt and beyond through the Rafah crossing, the only passageway leading to the rest of the world for most thousands.
They closed that?
They closed it, yeah. So, let's see, where am I here?
That's the only way they can get goods in.
So Palestinians in Gaza are not only under a seven-year-long blockade and over a decade of continuing tightening closures, but are once again locked in and out of those who happen to be outside of the Strip. The very tiny, very overcrowded Gaza Strip, which no concept of when their jailing gate will be reopened. The hardest thing in Gaza, we have to wait for everything. Every moment we are waiting must be patient. Without patience, you don't stand a chance.
It's a concentration camp.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to wait for the power to come back on. Have to wait for the border to open. You have to wait to receive your salary if you have work, which 34% of Gaza population don't. You have to wait for a shared taxi because there is a serious gas shortage now. Every possible thing. You have to wait and wait and wait. And a few things we listed are only but a few of the daily frustrations, things which drive you crazy, suffocate and depress you every single day. But then there is the gas and fuel crisis, the shattered economy, the patients waiting for operations and medications. The Palestinian Information Center reports that Gaza's fuel crisis will lead to an imminent humanitarian and environmental disaster, as has started to cripple the vital sectors of the Gaza Strip, and that 190 water wells supplying 1.7 million citizens and four sewage treatment stations will stop working, meaning more shit will be dumped into Gaza's sea. And that's by wording, and it's really the only way to put it. Last time I checked, sewage was being pumped into the sea at a rate of 90 million liters a day, with a growing population and growing power outages. I can only imagine the number higher now. And the article also mentions the impact of the fuel crisis on waste collection, which even without the fuel shortage is already on its crisis. And Palestinian fishers wait for the Zionist Navy to stop shooting on them, stop abducting them. And while futility for any government government or supposedly powerful body, when does the UN use its power, when NATO and the West wish it so,
they don't do anything.
That to actually intervene and stop the Zionist piracy in Palestinian waters. This thing is a long article. But, you know, please don't forget the Gazans. You know,
don't forget our brothers and sisters are in an open-air concentration camp. There's no other way to express it.
Yeah.
It's like a jail. Just open, that's all.
Yeah,
people who have left can't get back to their homes.
The actual site, okay, that I'm reading this from is called In Gaza, okay, ingaza.wordpress.com, right? And the article is called Remember Gaza. So please go to that, folks, and it's the end of our show. I want to thank everybody for there's this one article I wanted to get to tonight. We didn't get a chance. But U.S. to rewrite Haiti's constitution to better service the 1%. Right?
That Clinton and Bush were involved in that.
You got a picture of Bill Clinton hugging all the black folks there in Haiti.
Yeah,
what a hypocrite.
Oh, he is. It's unbelievable.
Well,
on that note, folks, we better go before we blow up.
Yeah.
Before we blow up in our brains.
Now, I tell you, if you want to read some of our fascinating websites, go to David Eichmann, headline.com, and you'll see some amazing stuff there, too.
Yep, he really gets a lot of news from all over the world, and it's gives
that
you a lot
stuff
of insight into what's happening.
A lot of stuff we like to read.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks, everybody, for joining us tonight. Have a pleasant evening, and join me tomorrow night.
And
I will be here unless thunderstorms or something prevent it.
Leo will be here tomorrow night, and I'll be back on Tuesday.
Yeah.
So I wish you a nice weekend, and I hope we all have some enjoyable summer weather. Good night, folks.
Hopefully. Yeah. Good night.